Hear that? It's the sound of you catching up on all the latest and greatest fintech news, trends, and updates thanks to Streetworthy, Yield Street's bi-weekly newsletter. Stay in the know with CEO Milind Mahiri as he takes a closer look at what's happening in the fintech space, then breaks down what each story could mean for investors like you. Give your portfolio the edge it deserves and subscribe to Streetworthy on LinkedIn today.
Welcome to The Yield, the official podcast of Yield Street. Every week, we bring you the latest market insights across our asset classes and products from subject matter experts. Our aim is to break the outdated mold of investing and help you add financial fuel to your ambitions through innovative investing products and strategies typically unavailable to most investors. Realize your next level with The Yield. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. The views you are about to hear do not necessarily reflect the views of Yield Street. This podcast is intended to be strictly informational and is not intended to be and should not be construed as a research report, investment advice, or the offer or sale of securities or any investment product. Now, let's get into the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Yield. Be sure to subscribe to the show and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube, and leave a review if you're enjoying the content. In case we haven't met before, I'm your host, Peter Kerr, and I'm the Director of Product Marketing here at Yield Street. Today, I'm joined by Ori Levy, who is the CEO of NF Trade, which allows users to easily create, buy, swap, and sell fully decentralized NFTs from various blockchain networks in a single, easy-to-use platform. Ori, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. Perhaps to start, we'll turn it over to you to introduce yourself a little bit further to the audience.
Yeah, so like you mentioned, I'm the CEO and founder of NF Trade. I've started my crypto journey quite early in 2012. I've been doing a lot of educational stuff towards the adoption of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, and mostly been doing marketing in the space, working with a lot of different startups in the 2017 boom. And yeah, been doing mainly PR, marketing, helping these companies, and got really excited about NFTs and decided to that there was a need for some other platforms other than the main one that everyone knows. And yeah, that's where I'm at.
Very exciting. And then maybe you could spend a couple of moments just kind of walking everyone through what is NF Trade and sort of, you know, kind of what the use case is for consumers.
Cool. So NF Trade started from a single need that I saw was missing from other marketplaces and other platforms in general. Which is NFT swaps, NFT trading between NFTs and NFTs. That idea was spawned to me from the use case of game items in other games, which we see so often. For example, any game you play and you have game items, people actually exchange or swap these items between themselves. And that was not possible on any platform I found on for NFTs. So that's where NF Trade started. And of course, we had the problem which blockchains we want to support. And obviously, we've decided to go for all of them and to become the first cross-chain and multi-chain NFT platform. We currently support 5 blockchains, and we have a lot more in the pipeline. Just to name a few that are coming soon are Solana, Tezos, Near Protocol, Harmony, and a few others.
Very cool. Yeah. So you know, you're kind of teasing in to a lot of concepts that I know we want to talk about today. But you know, first we always like to start at the highest level. So with that, you know, a lot of, you know, NFTs right now are really, you know, they certainly had a lot of attention, I would say, over the last year or two. And I think that's kind of exploded even more recently with the metaverse. So perhaps you could kind of walk everyone through what I think is kind of one of the more buzzier topics of the time right now with it, which is, what is the metaverse and kind of what do you think the future entails?
Yeah, so a lot of people are confusing the metaverse with this VR world that is fully 3D. And I don't think that is the only use case of metaverse. Okay, it will look a little bit more familiar if it will be with glasses on and it will be 3D and I will feel in the real space. But I think the metaverse in some ways existed for some time now with games like World of Warcraft and other games where you build your characters and you build your life there, right? I think the new thing about metaverses is, first of all, the inclusion of NFTs and real asset value and real ownership of these assets. That's the first big change that we're seeing with metaverses, the new coming metaverses compared. But yeah, so definitely the ownership of these assets is something that's going to change the way we treated these metaverses. And of course, the ability to do a lot more in these spaces and to interact with a lot more people who will get involved because of the technology becoming so popular.
So I'm kind of curious, you've kind of described a lot of the metaverse and kind of NFTs also as a part of it, like within the gaming environment. But I'm curious, like, do you see a broader adoption? I think I saw something where Walmart had like a mock-up video about, you know, what shopping in the metaverse could look like. You know, what type of adoption do you see outside of the gaming world?
Well, I'd love to see that. Definitely a lot of membership uses. So be part of this club and be part of that club, get access to enter this place or that place. So a lot of that. We're definitely going to see NFTs being used as contracts for real life assets, for example, like ownership of your car or ownership of your house. Even I think NFTs will play a big role there. And yeah, that's basically, I think ownership is definitely something we're gonna see a lot of. And like I said, membership basically memberships.
So then, you know, you brought up NFTs as well, and maybe, you know, it's worthwhile taking a second just to explain what NFTs are, and then we can kind of discuss a little bit about how they've currently been adopted. And I think, you know, adoption has kind of grown quite a bit recently.
Yeah, it has. It has definitely grown. And it's just the beginning, obviously. We're seeing a lot of hype and a lot of projects that I honestly don't see a lot of value in being sold for valued at a lot of money, but that's just a hype that's going to go away. And we're not going to see millions of these collections controlling the rest of our lives. Don't worry about it. But this is just the way of people to first get involved. NFTs, they are proof of ownership and they cannot be replicated. Their contents can be replicated, but the actual proof on the blockchain cannot. And having a source you trust to mention that this NFT was created by them or issued by them will give you the ability to verify that this asset is owned by that holder. And so we're seeing a lot of the biggest use case that we've seen in the past couple of years have been these funky collections. But like you mentioned, there's going to be a lot more use cases, especially for game items and other things that we're going to see in the next coming years.
So, you know, again, you know, I think like NFTs obviously have a very dedicated community to them in terms of actual non-physical art. But I think there's also been some bigger adoption also just within, you know, more traditional channels, including, you know, premier auction houses starting to consider, you know, how to use NFTs. What's kind of the use case, I guess, in more traditional physical art?
Now, obviously, there's always been this problem in the physical art world to verify an asset. So that's something that a lot of physical artists are looking to integrate into. I've personally purchased NFT art that is both digital and physical, and I got a nice proof of ownership with it. And of course, if I was ever to sell this physical art, I would also transfer the NFT with it. And I think that's something that did not exist before. And we've seen a lot of fake art being sold in the past. And it's a huge market, actually. And so, yeah.
So I guess there's both an authenticity component, but then also there's kind of like, you know, a history of ownership. But I'm kind of curious, you know, how much of that is dependent on kind of an NFT versus how much of that is kind of just something that the blockchain can help solve?
I mean, and the NFTs are on the blockchains, and so it's one works with the other. Maybe I didn't get the question.
Yeah. Okay. I'll ask it a little bit differently. I guess, you know, I might, you know, we talk so much about NFTs. You mentioned transferring the physical NFT, but that itself is just something that exists on the blockchain in the sense that, you know, again, it doesn't necessarily need to have a non-physical component. It's really just a ledger of ownership.
Yes, correct.
Very cool. Maybe you could walk us a little bit through. You mentioned at the start about how you know, NF Trade is really starting to offer multiple different blockchains.
Yeah, one of the main blockers for people to get in the NFT space is the high cost of getting in, of minting your first NFT. And this is something that other blockchains have solved. So we see, and in the next couple of years, we're gonna see this a lot more. Sorry about that, there's some neighbor's dogs. In the next couple of years, we're gonna see a lot more adoption to these other chains that are not on Ethereum. We're definitely seeing a huge growth on these already. And we can talk about which ones are we're seeing more adoption for if our listeners are interested. But yeah, if you were asking me what was the reason that we support them, so it's obviously to help those other ecosystems that are a little more less expensive to deal with, first of all.
But in terms of overall technology, really not much of a difference in the case of kind of an NFT, right? You know, is there a reason why Ethereum, for example, has been so popular for NFTs, or really should it just be available on, across all the different blockchains?
So Ethereum is the most popular because it is the first. And actually, and you were right, the other blockchains are actually have actually copied Ethereum's mechanism of a blockchain and adopted it in order for simple integrate for other dApps to easily integrate them. So all they basically offer is faster transactions, faster everything, but that comes on the expense of the real decentralization. And that's basically the biggest expense it comes on. And so while these other blockchains are a lot faster and can have more transactions and all that, they're not as decentralized as the Ethereum blockchain. Most users don't care. Real hardcore decentralization people are really care about that. And so still, Ethereum is the legacy chain. Every respectful project wants to be on Ethereum these days. But like I said, we're seeing this shift happening where people understand that in order to be able to have the masses involved in their NFT projects and not just the rich, lucky people who had Ethereum in the past or whatever, they were able to get that much money on Ethereum. When a minting costs you like just the gas fees cost like $150 just to mint, and it can go a lot more than that. Then, you know, we're seeing them more and more involved in those we're seeing a lot more projects choosing those other chains to work with.
So at the end of the day, to a consumer, right, the benefit really is lower fees, right? Lower gas fees. But then beyond that, like, is it harder to actually find depth of market in order to transact or buy or sell an NFT if it's on kind of a non-Ethereum blockchain?
Yeah. So for example, I think that NF Trade is here to fulfill that gap. While other marketplaces all support Ethereum, most of them or mostly don't support any other chains. We are here to facilitate that need along with the Ethereum chain as well. We wanna also have the interoperability to interact between them. And yeah, we try to integrate blockchains that have at least some minimal traction to them, not to flood our marketplace with some useless chains, but definitely we are here to support the chains in an early stage, I'd say.
And then, so, you know, kind of bring this back to the metaverse as well, you know, what type of influence do you think, or kind of, you know, either market support or kind of, you know, maybe some friction do you think the metaverse will have overall on kind of the values of NFTs. And maybe you can answer that across two components, right? One, the really well-known, the Bored Apes of the world and like the super pricey kind of original versions of some NFTs. And then also maybe for some smaller NFTs that, you know, we expect to come or, you know, maybe don't have those same high ticket prices.
Yeah. So just remind me again, the question.
How the metaverse might influence or kind of impact, you know, prices across, you know, the whole spectrum of really pricey NFTs to also kind of maybe some more affordable NFTs.
Yeah. So I think that the Bored Apes, for example, I'm not sure how much of a role it's going to play in the actual metaverse as much as I'm not sure. We're definitely going to be seeing the successful metaverses will be the ones that support multiple NFTs and not just the ones that they create, while those that they and there's going to be multiple metaverses. We already see a lot being built, like Decentraland, which has been in the game for quite a while, and then Sandbox and a few other big names that are already building their own worlds. Who's going to be the winner? I don't think there will be one. I think there will all be winners, but I definitely think that the ones with who will have the broader support and the broader connections in terms of blockchains, in terms of NFTs they support, will have higher user base and higher traction. In terms of the prices, I think we're gonna see in terms of the cheaper NFTs will be even cheaper. So there needs to be a market for $5 NFTs. It shouldn't start at like 500. There's no reason for that. It's all good. And obviously I'm a big believer of these high-end blue chip collections. I'm a Bored Ape owner myself too. So I tend to think that it's going to be really scarce and very hard to get as soon as, you know, more and more people like me get one and say, okay, that's it. I'm never going to sell it. And I think there's going to be more and more people like that.
Do you think as it relates to Bored Ape that these are kind of like, because they're, and I know I'm oversimplifying it, they're kind of like generation one that, you know, you look back 30 years from now and it's like, whoa, you know, like there's tens of thousands of NFTs out there, but the Bored Ape was kind of like, you know, the original series that really brought NFTs into the mainstream and then become, you know, again, at least like supportive of some high prices now.
I don't know exactly what to put, where exactly Bored Ape did it so good, mm-hmm. but they did it. And I think it was a mixture of all of the above. You know, the fact that they were one of the first real collections that were able to get people really hyped about trades, as well as built really did well building their community. And I think it's all about community. And they have, at the end of the day, their community is super supportive. They have the Ape Follow Ape movement, all very high quality people ended up being there. And I think that's what helped. We've seen the other CryptoPunks, which is a lot. They started in 2017. And, you know, that's the first NFT collection, basically. And, you know, we've seen them going down a little bit in the market based on some things they've published and said, but it's hard to tell. It's hard to tell what's going to happen. I definitely think that Bored Ape community is amazing. And the way that they've handled things showed.
And so I'm, you know, maybe this is helpful for some of our listeners as well. And I know I've certainly struggled with this as well, but like, you know, just using the Bored Ape, right? It's roughly the same image, more or less, right? At least 85, 90% of it. And then there, as I understand it, you know, for the most part, if there's, you know, let's just call it 100 of different versions out there, and I think that's an understatement. There's all these small tweaks, right? Whether he's wearing a hat, he's got a cigarette in his mouth, some of the uses of color and all those things. Can you explain, you know, how someone should think about the rareness of something like a Bored Ape, knowing that there's 100 of them out there, but, you know, there's kind of like how often they appear to have blue or how often they have these things all impact the kind of scarcity value?
Yeah, so it's quite simple, actually. The rarity is calculated, and you can write this on this calculator yourself by, okay, here's how many different traits this creature has in this example. And so each trade has different options, and they range in rarity. Maybe there are 1,000 blue hats and 100 yellow hats, right? And 100 yellow hats. And then, yeah, we have, like you said, the cigarette in the mouth. All these things combined give you the rarity. So if one ape has more rare items, the rarest they are, the more rare the ape is. I think in general, it's a way of keeping the market. I mean, it does have a ranking, right? And you always want to be higher on top. So I think that's what creates, but there's no real difference in the utility of your ape or anything like that. But it is some sort of a status that you have having the rarer ape.
And then so kind of to that point, and this is actually, I'm not really aware of, but you know, are they still issuing new Bored Apes, or was there essentially initial collection of a finite amount with all those different characteristics and rarities, and that's it? You think Bored Ape for the most part is done, or will kind of the creators keep going?
I mean, they're definitely not done, because they've just raised a lot of money at a 1.5 billion valuation, as much as I'm aware. But what they have been doing, I'm definitely positive they're not going to release any more Bored Apes per se, but they have released the Mutant Apes, for example, which is another collection of actual 20,000, which one was given to all the Bored Ape holders and the other 10,000 were minted again. So they are doing some side projects, but they're not going to touch this original collection of 10,000.
And then so when they're kind of creating this next 20,000 endeavor, they're pretty much systematically defining what they think the rareness will be for anyone, right? So it's kind of like a very well-defined project for, you know, we're going to have 20,000, the rarest one will have one uniqueness and, you know, whatever the different kind of stratifications are. But generally speaking, it's all very much defined ahead of time as one singular project.
There are two ways to do it. One is the way you described just now, to have it planned and prepared. And one is to have the contract actually randomly generate them. And that's my favorite way. But I unfortunately, most projects don't go that route.
Okay, very cool. And so just, you know, when you think more about NFT adoption overall and, you know, the likelihood that, you know, most citizens across the globe, you know, at one point own an NFT, what do you think are some of the biggest barriers to that?
The biggest barrier is definitely the need to set up your wallet, remember the seed phrase, and basically remember a password. I know of people that are not old that can't even remember one single password they set up on their computer. I think that that's something that's probably going to change within the years, because more and more kids are born into creating passwords, and now it's something that's a bit more common to do. But still, the keeping your own password, keeping your own money, is something that is not very good for people. Unfortunately, we live in a society where a lot of people are good with some things and less good with other things. Not everyone can keep their own money. Not everyone can keep their own wallet. This is why we have banks, and this is why we have other services that help us do these things. So I think the biggest barrier is actually this whole decentralization and getting people the ability to open a wallet and to maintain their decentralized identity without giving so much responsibility to them. Meaning just being able, one of the projects that I really like is called Zengo. They've developed a very secure wallet that is using your biometrics to log in. And so you don't really have to remember your password, but you're still keeping it very safe.
Are there any solutions to the password problem, or does everyone need to have, you know, something written down on a piece of paper in order to kind of really feel like they're really safe and kind of?
Yeah, so I definitely recommend saving your seed phrase somewhere, and that's the best and most secure way. But like I said, there are some solutions like Zengo that is using biometrics, so you just have to basically look at your screen and you would open your wallet. but it's not probably still not as safe as a real seed phrase, but it's safe enough, at least for now.
Okay. You know, and I think, you know, we kind of all, you know, see a lot of positive benefits overall of the NFT movement. I'm kind of curious, like what is kind of the one thing that's come out of the NFT movement that you think is actually potentially net negative overall?
Whoa.
if you can limit to one.
Well, unfortunately, we're seeing people abusing this hype to make quick buck and go away. Yep. Definitely like to see less of that. I think that it will naturally disappear or become less common as people will get less excited about everything and more will do some more research before just hyping into every other project. I'm speaking as if I'm not one of them, but I am. And you know, I'm playing the same game. It's fun. It's fun. It's exciting, and I get it. But I just hope to see less scams.
I'm just kind of curious on that front, though, right? Because, like, you know, a lot of this is kind of like reminiscent of like the Securities Act of like 1933, where, you know, this is somewhat of a decentralized movement, but at the same time, you know, is there need for any sort of regulation as far as people kind of like, you know, pumping and dumping, you know, again, subpar things? I mean, they've got every reason to try to, you know, sell at a maximum price and, you know, say untrue things. Do you think there needs to be any kind of regulation or laws around kind of what you can and cannot do in the space?
Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of hard rules and hard laws. So in general, the answer is no. I don't think there needs to be regulation on all that, but I do think that companies can come up and be the authorities that give you the ranking. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a government thing, but it can definitely be this resource that you read, that you ask them for their approval. And we see it with influencers that are researching projects and their communities kind of trust them to only share good, high quality projects with them. So I think the vetting is being done decentralized. Just have to make sure who you listen to.
And I got another question just around, you know, the current market, right? So, you know, Ethereum, other cryptos has sold off a little bit. Any concern for you that, you know, there could be a little bit more of some downward pressure on prices overall for the underlying coins?
I'm here for the long run. I think that coins will go up and down and up and down, but eventually I believe in this ecosystem more than anything else. Like I said, I've been in this game for quite a while, so I know exactly how it works. Whenever there is hype, there is also a very big downtrend right after. You know, the strong, hardworking projects will continue building. The ones who were here for the quick buck will disappear. It's very healthy for the ecosystem to have those moments. I'm not concerned at all. I think it's all for the good.
How much do you think the overall volatility of kind of some of the underlying blockchains and coins plays into, you know, people getting comfortable with NFTs?
Yeah, I think that plays a huge role. I think that people who are buying, mainly because Ethereum, people are using dollars, swapping them into whatever coin they are required to buy those NFTs. And then when the Ethereum drops in value, they are basically losing a lot of their value. So I think they're freaking out. But we're actually seeing a little bit of correlation with the USD value of NFTs. Sometimes when the Ethereum price goes down, the price for NFTs go up in Ethereum. So people are actually looking still at the USD value, which is not only the right thing to do.
Okay. Any kind of parting thoughts here as we kind of get close to time here? Anything that you wish we discuss that we did not?
No, I think that hopefully we're going to see more and more people get on board, come up with cool projects and build this beautiful new exciting ecosystem that we're seeing in the past 2 years at least grow. And yeah, happy and to be part
curious,
of it.
Actually, you just reminded me of something else. You mentioned, you know, the good projects will remain durable and maybe the scammier ones kind of, you know, burn out. how can one tell the difference? What's your insight kind of to evaluating what projects are worthwhile versus what are maybe some pump and dump type deals?
I think that a real decentralized project, first of all, keeps their community updated all the time. And it's quite easy to see if they're publishing new developments or not. If you're not hearing from them for quite some time, you should probably consider that they are gone. And so, make sure that the community is kept updated with updates all the time.
Cool. And Ori, how can people find out more about NF Trade?
Yeah, follow us on Twitter. Come visit us on Telegram or Discord and participate in our conversations and grow with us.
Cool.
Ori, come trade. Yeah, you know, trading fees are 0% right now. So you can actually trade for free on NF Trade.
Cool. Ori, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you to all of our listeners as well. Remember to visit YieldTreat.com to learn more about our offerings and come to realize your next level with us. Also, subscribe to our YouTube channel so you never miss a show. And finally, be sure to join us next Wednesday as we host Jordan Wright in a discussion about the next generation of fintech and how it's empowering consumers and investors. Thank you and see you next week.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Yield. For the latest updates on the alternative investing space, go to YieldStreet.com. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. If you enjoyed the show, feel free to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, as this will help other investors like yourself find our show. If you have any questions, please visit us at YieldStreet.com. Thanks again for listening, and see you next week. The Yield Street podcast you just heard only reflects the opinions of the host, who is an associated person of Yield Street, and does not necessarily reflect the views of Yield Street or any of its affiliates or other associates. The podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be and should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security and is not an offer or sale of any securities or investment product. The podcast is also not a research report and is not intended to be and should not be construed as investment advice.
Support for this podcast comes from Yield Street. Trying to time the stock market can lead to regret. At Yield Street, our alternative investments are designed to create predictable secondary income streams, providing you with tools to help put your money to work immediately. These investments in asset classes like art, real estate, and legal finance typically have low correlation with the stock market and target annual yields up to 7-10%. Welcome to the next generation of investing. Welcome to Yield Street. Sign up today at YieldStreet.com.